one of the big differences is that the snowshoe hare is the one that turns color in the fall. And that's triggered by the angle of the sun, and it creates hormones within the hare that cause its hair to change color. And the chipmunk chewing on bark, making stuff for its nest. That's a good observation. Nicholas noted that the large buck in the school forest may have been harvested, not showing up on their trail cameras. Pretty interesting there. And Emily, and I myself was a little flabbergasted when she used the word flabbergasted. That's a wonderful word for a fourth and fifth grade student. I'm really happy to hear that. I love the words myself, and flabbergasted is a really nice one. And flabbergasted because a loon on Grand Lake paddling alongside the dock, and there's probably one of the juveniles getting ready to head south. Its parents are probably already halfway to the Gulf and taking their own time about it. We will continue with our student reports coming up in the next half hour, 45 minutes or so, just before 8 o'clock. And you can tune in then and have another listen to what the kids are finding. This is 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker, telling the stories of northern Minnesota through music, news, conversation, and events. Check out playlists, podcasts, and more at KAXE.org.
Coming up next, we've got the Up North Report, local news. We heard from Mary from Cass Lake. She said, morning, Heidi. Morning, John. Ice on the small ponds around far northeast Webb Lake yesterday.
Get your skates out.
No, don't.
I'll get my skates out. Yeah, you
just
wait.
Just sharpen them.
Yeah. Right. Go now. Sharpen your skates. That's right.
Coming up, local news, and then we'll bring you more phonology with John coming up about 7:20, and more student reports coming up before 8 o'clock. John, that was exactly the section of the Rob Marone's classroom when he wouldn't tell them anymore. I absolutely love when we hear from his class at Pike Lake about the research they're doing.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've had many conversations with Rob. He's a great teacher. And he, you know, a couple of years ago, he just said, you know what? I'm tired of doing all the work for these kids. I'm just going to let them figure it out. So they come to him with questions and he directs them to the proper text so that they can find the answers. And that is what teaching is all about.
No kidding.
Congratulations, Rob. And congratulations to you, his students, because you're learning in a way that will help you to hold on to that information for the rest of your lives.
You flabbergasted us this morning.
Yeah,
I love it.
You did.
More news is coming up next. This is the Tuesday Morning Show.
For KAXE News, I'm Megan Buffington with the Up North Report. Stony Point Campground on the shore of Leech Lake in the Chippewa National Forest will have a shorter camping season next summer to accommodate renovations. The popular 44-site campground is 14 miles east of Walker. The campground will be open May 9th through August 4th. It will transition to first come, first serve on July 19th in preparation for construction. The project will address deferred maintenance by constructing a new well and well house, a new water distribution system, and a new electrical system with 50-amp service to each campsite, according to the Forest Service. Leading up to the campground's closure, water may be intermittently unavailable, there may be increased noise, and some areas may be closed. Officials plan to open Stony Point Campground for its regular season in 2026. Brainerd senior Maya Taugis won the 50-yard freestyle at the girls' 2A swimming and diving state meet Saturday. The Brainerd Dispatch reports Taugis won the event with a school record 22.79 second race. She also placed third in the 100-yard freestyle, setting another school record. Taugis was also the anchor for the two Brainerd relays that placed at the meet. The Warriors took second in the 200 free relay and sixth in the 400 free relay. Brainerd junior Avery Durr was also part of the relay teams and placed 8th in the 100 breaststroke. Northern Minnesota swimmers and divers also saw success in the single A meet. Two Harbors junior Bella Imholtz placed 6th in the 200 freestyle and 7th in the 100 backstroke. Park Rapids sophomore Avery Schuler won the 100 freestyle consolation final, finishing 9th overall. And two Northland divers finished in the top 10. ESCO senior Riley Duravec placed 8th and Detroit Lakes senior Hope Hamm placed 9th. Northern Minnesotans have two football teams to cheer on during the championships later this week. Number 3 North Staples Motley will play in the 2A Prep Bowl at 4 p.m. Friday. Staples Motley was the 10th-ranked 2A team at the end of the regular season. The Cardinals beat top-ranked Barnesville in the quarterfinals. They beat number 2 Chatfield 36-24 in the semifinals. And they'll hope for yet another upset, facing 3rd-ranked number 2 South Jackson County Central. Number 2 North Fertile Beltrami will face number 2 South Hills Beaver Creek in the 9-player championship at 10 a.m. Saturday. The Falcons will hope to continue their dominance as the highest-ranked 9-player team remaining. Mountain Iron Buell lost to Hills Beaver Creek 20-26 in the state semifinals. Manoman-Waubun and Pequot Lakes were also handed losses, both falling in the state semifinals Saturday. The Thunderbirds lost to last year's 1A runner-up, Springfield, 16-30, and the Patriots suffered a narrow defeat to Dassel Cokato in the 3A semifinals, losing 26-29. This past election cycle has again raised questions about the viability of news outlets and how audiences are consuming information. New research indicates Minnesota's media landscape is on solid footing, even with some challenges. The University of Minnesota's Journalism Center issued a report on the state's local news ecosystem. Like many other towns and cities across the country, there are concerns about outlets shutting down because of dwindling ad revenue. More than 12% of all local outlets in Minnesota have closed since 2018. But Center Director Ben Toff says there is hope.
We have a lot of new news organizations that have launched over the last 6 or 7 years to, in many cases, try to fill in some of the gaps where there have been closures.
He points to the growth of nonprofit publications that have an online focus and help inform underserved populations. In Minnesota, they represent more than 1 in 5 new outlets founded since 2018. Toff acknowledges a bigger presence of outlets that bill themselves as local news providers, but are sometimes very partisan. He says they tend to push out press releases or articles generated by artificial intelligence. Thanks to Minnesota News Connection for this story. That's it for the Up North Report. From the KAXE News Desk, I'm Megan Buffington, telling the stories of northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report on KAXE is made possible by Woodland Bank, providing customers with personal and business banking solutions, as well as offering Kasasa checking accounts. You can learn more online at woodland.bank.
Coming up, we'll have more news from National Public Radio. I'm Heidi Holton with John Latimer. It's 7:08. We're hearing from former President Bill Clinton. He's talking with Lila Fadel about his new book that's called Citizen, My Life After the White House.
Support comes from Hot Spring Hot Tub of Northern Minnesota on Middle School Avenue in Bemidji, offering hot tubs, pool tables, saunas, and more. Information available at hotspringhottubmn.com. We receive support from Edward Jones Financial Advisor Christina Gallas, taking a personalized approach to investing to serve her clients. More information at edwardjones.com. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
Rain continuing today with highs 40 to 47, breezy east winds 10 to 20, shifting from the southwest in the afternoon, could gust up to 40 to 45 miles an hour, evening lows in the mid to upper 20s. Some snow may move in tomorrow and into the evening with accumulations less than an inch or even half an inch, highs 25 to 35, and looking at Thursday, mostly cloudy, highs in the mid to upper 30s.
We receive support from Minnesota Power, an elite company meeting the challenge of climate change head-on while powering the region's homes, businesses, and industries with safe, reliable energy. More at mnpower.com/energyforward.
We were talking earlier, John, you were admitting your passion for stuffing.
Goes beyond passion.
Okay.
It's more of an
obsession,
addiction.
Okay, all the words. We're asking for your must-have Thanksgiving dishes. You can text us at 218-326-1234. You talked about being a little angry about salary being added. We heard from our very own Scott Hall. He says, salary raw develops the jaw. Salary stewed is more quietly chewed. And that's from Ogden Nash.
Of course it is.
I love celery. I was just talking to someone about this yesterday. It's such a very small taste, or I don't know how to explain it, but it adds so much. I
read somewhere that the nourishment that provided by celery is significantly less than
any other vegetable. Yeah. It's all water.
I think somebody once compared it to cigarette filters. It's just cellulose.
I don't care. I like that subtle taste of it. Coming up, more from National Public Radio, and then John Latimer's full phonology report.
Oh, my.
This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin.
And I'm Leila Faldin. Former President Clinton is out with a new memoir today. It's called Citizen, My Life After the White House, a title taken from his final address to the nation as president.
I will never hold a position higher or a covenant more sacred than that of President of the United States. But there is no title I will wear more proudly than that of citizens.
The book recounts how Clinton spent the years since doing philanthropic work across the globe, from working with Nelson Mandela to get treatment to people with HIV to helping free two journalists jailed in North Korea. I started by asking him what it was like to go from president of a global superpower back to citizen.
You know, I had to learn how to do a lot of things all over again, and I was determined to keep living in the present and living for the future, so that I didn't spend any time wishing I were still president.
Now, you're credited with really breathing new life into the Democratic Party in the 90s following the Reagan Revolution. What would you say the Democrats need to do to start winning again and winning these voters who feel like they can't make ends meet and life isn't great for them?
I would say two things. I'd say we can't keep asserting that things are great in the economy. In some senses, they are great. But first of all, we're saddled with some cost of living challenges, which are not unique to the United States. But it's pretty hard if you're out there in the middle of the country and you're working hard and you've got two or three kids and you have to watch every penny you make. And secondly, the economic benefits of the current recovery have been widely shared where it has stuck. But it takes a while for people everywhere in the country to feel the benefits. People are not economic engines alone. There's a lot of identity conflicts racing through our society now and through our world. And these culture wars topics still have enormous salience. And we Democrats have to learn to talk to people.
Clinton also addresses some of the controversies in his life in this book, including the way he felt the press unfairly treated his wife, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, when she ran for president in 2016 over her handling of official emails.
I believe that it's said out in my book, not because I wanted to relitigate it, but because I wanted to let it go. And I couldn't let it go if nobody ever collected all the facts and put them in one place. So I let it go. I'm in a good humor now.
Do you feel like there are lots of moments like that in the book that you felt like, I need to write this down, I need to talk about this, and I need to let it go?
Oh, well, anything that was about anything negative, if I thought there would be questions asked, and I would think, well, maybe I ought not to wait for people to ask questions, or I don't like to look like I'm hiding, I'll just say what I got to say.
I mean, that included one of the most difficult parts of your presidency, where you addressed the relationship you had with Monica Lewinsky, and you said, I live with it all the time. What did you mean?
I mean, it was a terrible time for my whole family, and I'd like to let it go, but I still had to live with it because other people didn't want it to be dropped, and because it was a problem, so I just thought, well, this is a chance to say what I have to say about that. I felt the same way about other issues. I think if I hadn't said anything, my critics would say, Well, he didn't say anything about that. But I was afraid all the way along, because look how far we are into this conversation and how little we've talked about how I spent the lion's share of my life the last 24 years. I'd working with my foundation, working on the AIDS problem and the building the Clinton Global Initiative. I mean, I get it.
One of the hallmarks of your presidency is you did reach across the aisle, even at times when your party didn't agree with you. And one of the things that President-elect Trump took aim at was the North American Free Trade Agreement, which, you know, some point to as the reason for the widening inequities that the U.S. is in today over the trade barriers and reduced tariffs. I mean, what brought the U.S. to this place of this deep, deep distrust and this anger over jobs going abroad and feeling like unions are not respected?
It's easy to say that NAFTA was wrong, but the truth is, if you look at the agreement we've got today, it's just basically an updated version of NAFTA that we...
The one that Trump renegotiated during his presidency.
Yeah, but it was high time. But as the, you know, the NAFTA was negotiated in the late 90s. And so if you look at what's actually in this deal, they updated it. But it led to today, who are our biggest trading partners? Canada and Mexico. We still have a high level of hemispheric cooperation, and we can't get an orderly solution to the border without cooperation from Mexico. And I feel what really happened with the trade war was that, this is my opinion anyway, that we quit enforcing the agreements we made as vigorously as I think they should have been enforced. And then we were too optimistic, if you will, about what would happen over the long run with China.
This book is laced with moments you reached across the aisle as president and as citizen. Is that bipartisan work still possible today?
If we live in a world where the only political strategy that works is a polarizing, damning, you don't count strategy, where the only thing that counts is loyalty. Loyalty is another word in current parts to total obedience. Don't ask questions. Now it's just a winner take all, pick the blood off the ground. So I keep trying in my limited way as I age and struggle on to make a positive difference. I still am very optimistic. I'll bet you'll be surprised about where we'll be in 8 years.
The 42nd President of the United States, Bill Clinton, his book, Citizen, My Life After the White House, is out today. Mr. President, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
This is NPR News.
National Public Radio's Morning Edition. It's here on KAXE at 7:18. Coming up next, it is Phenology with John Latimer. I'm Heidi Holton. Thanks for tuning in today. We are continuing to see some rain. You probably heard the, was dripping, I was hearing all night.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's...
Not a full-on rain, but a lot of water came.
Steady. Yeah. I didn't dump the rain gauge, but I sort of looked at it at 5 o'clock this morning, and it... It had about 3/4 of an inch of rain in it. It might have been a little bit more, but it was significant. Up to this point, for the whole month, I think I'm under a half of an inch. I think Bob might have had a little bit more. I think he had about a tenth of an inch more in the one rainstorm that we had. But I've had, I think, 22/100ths, 27/100ths, and a hundredth, which would be a half an inch.
Okay. We'll be hearing from Tornado Bob coming up in about an hour. If you have a weather question, you can send it our way, 218-326-1234.
We receive support from Sanford Bemidji Orthopedics and Sports Medicine Center, specializing in total joint repair. More at sanfordhealth.org. And we receive support from Klockau Brewing Company in Grand Rapids, who have been making classic old world styles of beer as well as modern trendsetters for 7 years now. Their taproom is open daily at 3 on weekdays, noon on weekends. More info at clockowbrewing.com.
The Loon Country Quilters are meeting tonight at 6 p.m. at Grand Village in Grand Rapids. Helen Adamson will bring a program on her 365-day challenge quilt. There we go. What a challenge.
Yeah, my wife has some challenging quilts that are 365 days in the making and more.
Okay.
She is an artist, and she starts off with an idea, and she works on it for a while, and then the idea, I don't know, changes or waxes and wanes, and she sets it aside and comes back to it at a later date. I see them come out and get worked on and then disappear and then come out again. But the end result is always worth waiting for.
Yeah. Lots of things happening in our region, including the second week of performances of Scrooge, a musical adaptation of A Christmas Carol, that is at the Bemidji Community Theater, November 22nd through the 24th. Tickets available at bemidjicommunitytheater.com. Also going on, there's a Silver Star presentation to the family of Marine Corporal Norris Brendan. That is tomorrow. It's at 4 p.m. at the Grand Rapids VFW. Corporal Brendan grew up in Talmoon, and he died in Vietnam in 1968, and four of his fellow comrades will speak at the event. Great conversation about that yesterday on the Monday morning show for our Bright Spot.
Yeah, I heard it. Nice. Programming on KEXE is supported in part by Pickett Agency, an official MinSure partner. It's open enrollment season, and Pickett Agency is here to support the Bemidji community with health plan enrollment and guidance. More information is available by calling 218-751-1213 or by visiting PickettAgency.com. It's time for the Phenology Show. Phenology is the rhythmic biological nature of events as they relate to climate. And one of the big things in the news today is the word snow. And fortunately, it wasn't accompanied by my least favorite term, wind chill. although I have come to some understanding about wind chill. And I have, with the help of a guest who's coming on later this morning, Craig Bowron, and a friend of his who is also a physician and trained as a physicist, he explained to me that wind chill is simply the time that it takes you to reach a certain temperature. So if the temperature is minus 20, you would, if there were no wind at all and you went outside, it would take you X number of minutes to reach. I'm not talking about you because you are alive and human, but if you were a pan of water, it would take you a certain amount of time to reach minus 30, minus 20. If you add wind speed to that, the time that it takes you to get to that temperature is reduced. So you don't go colder than that, you just go faster. So if they say the wind chill is minus 20 and they say the wind chill is minus 30, it simply means that you will reach minus 20 at the same rate that you would reach minus 30 if there were no wind. So it's just the amount of time taken to get to a temperature. Wind chill at minus 30 doesn't mean you're going to be minus 30 if the air temperature is minus 20. You're just going to get to minus 20 faster. It took me a while, and I wasn't happy to learn that, but I guess I'm accepting wind chill for what it is. One of those little tools that maybe makes it a little easier for you to understand that you need to bundle up. Well, That's not in the forecast now. There's no ice. There was some ice up north on Owen Lake yesterday morning. I doubt that there'll be any this morning, but you get a clear night like last night, the night before last, and day, and the temperature overnight can drop into the 20s, and you can have ice forming. We do not have any ice on Crooked Lake where I live. We have also in the forecast heard the word snow, and I went back and looked through my records to see when we've had our first snow. Now, I always relate to snow as the first snowflakes falling, that's snow, and then first snow that stays, that accumulates to a quarter inch. So there has to be some accumulation. There has to be snow on the ground, in the grass, whatever, in order for it to make the list. And the list goes back to 1977, and the first snowfall in 1977 was on October 7th. But in 79, it was November 2nd, and I think the amazing thing to me is the number of times that the first snowfall has fallen on Halloween. As far as mean, median, mode, and the rest go, that one is probably in the mode. And it is probably the one that comes up most often. So you can read into that what you will. As far as late dates for first snow, in 1990, November 9th, 1994, November 28th, we might, well, if we get snow tomorrow, it'll be the 20th. That'll be probably not going to make the latest ever for snow. But November 29th in 2007 and in 2014, November 8th. Other than that, mostly, as I said, mostly in October. And oddly enough, a lot of those October dates are either Halloween or very close. I see a lot of October 27th, October 29th, October 30th, October 25th, October 27th. In 2021, October 31st. In 2023, October 31st. And let's see, the 24th this year has not yet had, we have not had snow. But tomorrow, if we have snow, it'll certainly fall in the 10 latest dates of the year for snow. So we'll see. I'm not holding out a lot of hope. Not that I miss snow. I mean, snow can come when it will. I'd rather have ice, but that's just because that's where my sport interest lies. I'm a skater and an ice boater and not a, I don't mind snowshoeing and cross-country skiing, but I can do that in January. So give me December as a nice dry month with no snow and I'll be a happy dog. Of course, the rest of you are going to be cursing me, but that's how it goes. I noticed on my travels over the last weekend that there are a couple of very, very bright yellow tamaracks out there. Now, I use the word tamarack advisedly because I know that it is not a tamarack that I'm looking at right now. The trees that I'm seeing right now that look like tamaracks are not. They are European larch, and they have a different phenology, a long-established different phenology, and the difference between the two trees to your eye in the summertime is pretty subtle. It has to do with the color of the new growth. It has to do with the way the bark looks, kind of pinkish on the European larch, more brownish on the on the tamarack. Tamaracks tend to, in this part of the country, they tend to grow in low ground. I do have some high ground tamaracks, and I have some quite big ones. But the European larch is a larger tree than the tamarack as grown, say, side by side. And the European larch, if you have one and walk up to it in the summertime, it's going to feel very soft and kind of droopy, kind of easy to touch, like a balsam, you know, kind of gentle. But the tamarack, the actual tamarack, is not going to be that tree. Now, just looking at the, pardon me, at the phenology this time of year, the tamarack is done. There are maybe a few little orange needles clinging to the new growth. But other than that, when I look across my swamp in front of my house, the tamaracks are just absolutely bare for the most part. The European larch are largely colored. Now, they're probably past their peak of fall color, but they are definitely still colored. And what typically I see this time of year is the lower parts of the larch will be either bare or the needles will be orangey, and the top half will be shocking yellow, just gorgeous yellow. And so if you have a tamarack in your neighborhood that's bright yellow right now, chances are it's a European larch. And there are some other differences. The flower in the springtime is quite remarkable. The female flower of the tamarack and the European larch are both quite remarkable. They're both a beautiful magenta or burgundy, and the European larch tamarack, or the European larch female cone, has these green streaks that kind of go right up the center of the cone, of the bract on the cone. And they're really stunning. I have many, many pictures of them because I was so taken with them. I had one in my yard for many years, and then the larch beetles got it and killed it. And now I have to depend on just running across them on other people's properties. But if you're living in a neighborhood where there's a bright yellow tamarack today, chances are it is a European larch. And just to give you an idea, the average start date for peak fall color is the 28th of October, and the end date for peak of color runs, well, 2023, it was the 8th of November, 2016, it was the 16th of November, pardon me, in 2021, it was the 19th of November, so today, in 2021 would have been, you know, sort of the end of the peak of color. Now, the actual color probably runs much longer than that, but you get the idea. There is some delay there, and this is the time of year when they are kind of past their peak, but still bright yellow, and you're not going to mistake, well, you are going to mistake them for tamaracks, but they're not. They're European larch. They're a relative. They're both larix in the genus larix, and they behave much the same through the year, but the phenology is considerably different, and especially this time of year, there's a lot of difference in the phenology of the European larch. And this is when you really can identify them, as opposed to, say, the tamarack, which are much further along in terms of their senescence. Other things I've observed this past week, well, the turkeys, my neighbor Marvin reports that there were a dozen or so turkeys hanging out at his house over the week, and he has had them pretty much most of the fall. A couple of trumpeter swans down on Crooked Lake over the weekend. I could hear them calling, and I went down and checked them out with my binoculars. A couple of diving ducks on the lake. They were skittish. I don't know why. Duck season is upon us. And the minute I showed up, they took off and flew across the lake. But just given the way they took off, I knew that they were diving ducks and not puddle ducks, not dabblers. Dabblers jump right into the air. They flap their wings and they come right off the water like it suddenly turned scalding hot. And diving ducks run for a while because they're heavier. They're divers and they need to have the kind of buoyancy that allows them to go to the bottom in deeper water and find their food sources. So they need to run a little bit, like a loon. They need to get a little speed up before they actually take to the air. Walking in the woods this past weekend, I sure came across a lot of Canada Mayflower berries. Ruby red, they're sometimes called. If you're out and if you are deer hunting and you maybe shot a deer and you're out in the woods looking for that blood trail, the ruby red or the Canada Mayflower berries are going to catch your eye. They look like little drops of blood on the leaves. And take a moment and pick one and taste it. They are very, very sweet. And they're not a lot to them. I mean, they're mostly seed. That berry is about the size of a match head, and it's about 80% seed and about 20% skin and sugar. And that pretty much sums it up. But they are delicious if you want to try one. Now's a good time to do that. And they will persist right through the winter. And so I often find them when I'm out in the springtime walking around looking for new things coming up, and I'll find a Canada Mayflower berry and help myself, and I'm never disappointed. They're always quite good. My friend Dallas Hudson reported hearing a wood frog over in the Akeley area calling while he was out deer hunting. What the was his response? I suspect that it has to do, you know, they will be singing in mid-April, one hopes. If it goes later than that, it will be a really long winter. But usually mid-April is when we hear the wood frogs begin to sing. They and the spring peepers are the first frogs that you'll hear singing in the spring in this area. So listen for those. Kingfishers, I haven't seen one, but Dallas reported one last week. They are late to leave the area. You may have heard the slice of green cheese, the daily dose of phenology this morning, talking about kingfishers. And oftentimes, if there's open water, they eat minnows, they eat fish. And if there's open water, you're likely to see a kingfisher. They'll stay until the last minnow retreats. And as long as there's open water, they'll find minnows. So they'll stick around and hunt and fish and leave only when they absolutely positively can't find any open water. Looking in the woods at different plants, blackberries and raspberries, man, I could count the leaves around my yard on both hands. Just a few. The blackberries are red or burgundy, and the raspberries are yellow or pale green, and there are only just a few remaining leaves on those. At ground level, the last of the blueberries are done. I'm not seeing any more blueberry leaves. The burgundy leaves of the bunchberry, Canada cornidensis, Cornus canadensis, bunchberry, dogwood. The leaves are deep purple right now and quite beautiful. I was just admiring them, just standing in a patch of them and kind of looking around, and these little flecks of purple against that brownish background of dead leaves and dead plants. It's really quite lovely to look at the bunchberries right now. So enjoy those. The bald eagles have been bringing sticks to the nest all week, and this is absolutely the time of year that they do that. They will, in the springtime, also augment their nest with more sticks, but November seems to be the time of year when they bring in new furniture and change the feng shui of the nest for the winter. So watch for that. If you live near an eagle's nest, you may get a chance to see one come flying in with a big load. Well, that came in the other day with a stick that was longer than the bird, not longer than its wingspan, but certainly longer from tail to beak than the eagle itself. And I often wonder who makes the decision about what goes where in the nest, because if you go to an eagle's nest and look at the ground underneath the nest, there are a remarkable number of sticks that are laying on the ground. Now, whether they were just ill-placed or, one of the eagles went, nah, that does not go with our design and our decor here. We're just going to get rid of that. I can't say, but I do know that a lot of the work to bring those sticks to the nest ends up on the ground near the nest, but not in it. That's the Phenology Show for this week. Thanks for tuning in. As always, if you have comments, questions, or observations to share, we'd love to hear from you.
You can get Phenology on our website, or each week you get a newsletter if you sign up for that Season Watch newsletter, and you get lots of nature information, including links to our Tuesday morning show. Check it out at kaxe.org, and of course that Season Watch Facebook page, so active, so many people posting such positive things, asking questions of each other, showing our beautiful natural environment that we get to live in. Hope you'll join us on Facebook. I always contend that's one of the very few best uses of Facebook there is.
Yeah, that's that's where I go.
Sorry to be negative, but yeah.
I don't spend a lot of time looking at a lot of other things on Facebook, on social media for that matter, but I do check out Season Watch because there's always something fun there.
Coming up, we'll have best wishes. Thanks for tuning in this morning. We're expecting rain throughout the day with highs 40 to 47. Lots of wind. East winds 10 to 20. It's going to shift from the southwest in the afternoon and gusts up to 40 to 45 miles an hour.
Support comes from Thrive Up North, sharing the stories of a welcoming community of people who've chosen to make Itasca County their new home. Promoting all the area has to offer, including natural amenities and jobs in healthcare, manufacturing, and more. Offering an incentive package to help with your move to the area. Learn more at thriveupnorth.com.
Coming up in about an hour, we welcome Dr. Craig Bowron to the program. He's going to be talking about Movember. He is the author of a book called Man Overboard, A Medical Lifeline for the Aging Male. And you're going to want to tune in for that. But
I certainly am going to want to.
Yeah.
That's me.
I'll drop out of the men's health conversation, but I have a few things to say.
As an observer, you're sort of one of those outside observers. You're like, oh, okay, I see.
Well, and I'm not selling his book or anything, but it's been a very useful book in our household.
It's gotten a lot of rereads at my house as well.
There you go.
We receive support from the Watermark Art Center in Bemidji, located at 505 Bemidji Avenue. Galleries are open to the public. Their on-site retail store features regionally created art, home decor, and handcrafted gifts. More information at watermarkartcenter.org.
It is time for best wishes. We do our best to wish our friends and neighbors a happy birthday and happy anniversary. Today is November 19th. And we want to wish a very happy anniversary, 47th, to Terry and Margaret Madsen from Spring Lake.
We'd also like to wish Rob Bossy a happy birthday. Rob is in Mountain Iron, and Lucy Gorman is celebrating her 69th birthday today, and Lucy is in Chesapeake, Virginia, and she's Jen's mom. Happy birthday to Lucy. And Martin Hayes is having a birthday today. Martin, happy birthday wherever you are. I hope it's a happy spot.
We're going to take a listen now to our album of the week. It's by Sophie Galt. It's called Baltic Street Hotel. She's a Nashville-based singer-songwriter and a guitarist, and she's releasing her second album now. And we're going to take a listen now to a cover she's done of a Patti Griffin song. This is Sophie Gault.
Disfigured, you thought I tasted like rain. There's nothing here but a shadow, nothing here. Now you know, you know, now you know. There's nothing here but a shadow, now you know.
That's our album of the week. We'd love to know what you think of it. It's Sophie Gault with her cover there of a Patti Griffin song, Every Little Bit. You can find more information. It's the top story right now at KAXE.org. It's 7:48. I'm Heidi Holton with John Latimer. Rain throughout the day today with highs 40 to 47. Very windy. Could gust up to 40 to 45 miles an hour. We've got Tornado Bob coming in after 8 o'clock. And we'll be talking big weather picture.
Stay tuned for that. Stay tuned for Craig Bowron in the 8:40 time slot when we're going to talk about men's health. Right now, it is time to continue with our student phenology reports, our Funding for student phenology is provided in part by the Minnesota Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund. Phenology talkbacks are produced by Charlie Mitchell. And our next report comes from Underwood Elementary's trip to the Long Lake Conservation Center near Palisade.
Hi, this is Charlie and Courtney from Underwood Elementary School in Underwood reporting from Long Lake Conservation Center from November 11th through the 13th. We had frosty mornings and clear, pleasant days with a high temperature of 48 degrees Fahrenheit with a low of 21. We awoke on Tuesday morning to find the puddles in the road to be frozen, but there is no ice on Long Lake. Long Lake staff says that it is not uncommon for the lake to be at least partially frozen at this time of year. Last year, icing was on November 19th. The open water has allowed a bevy of trumpeter swans to stay on the lake. We counted 10 this morning. October said she heard an owl hooting at night. We suspect it was a barred owl.
During our school's trip to Long Lake last year, there was lots of beaver activity. They were very busy for most of day and night. This year, we observed no beaver activity at all. We wonder if they have moved to a different lodge or a nearby lake. As winter approaches, most of the migrating animals have left, leaving only the hardy tolerators to remain. This includes pump squirrels, deer, white-breasted nuthatches, black-capped chickadees, and red-bellied woodpeckers, who are all very active around the bird feeders. The clear skies allowed us to get a good look at the half-full moon. It is a great time to explore nature, and we wanted to remind everyone to unplug, wear blaze orange, get outside, and live connected!
Yeah, don't forget the blaze orange. It's been part of my attire for the last couple of weeks, and probably will continue for another couple of weeks more, and we'll just have to wait and see. One note there, the beaver activity, sometimes beavers can exhaust the supply of food, especially around a small lake. They will only go so far from water to harvest a tree, and beyond that, they will not go because they're too vulnerable to attack by wolves, and they need to be able to get back into the water where they feel safe. And so sometimes they, like on my lake, they eat the aspen and they disappear for 8 to 10 years, and then they come back and the aspens have regrown, and then they have another food supply. So they sort of come and go. Our next report comes from Rum River Elementary School's visit to the Long Lake Conservation Center.
Hi, this is Ashton.
And Ruby from Rum River Elementary in Andover, reporting from Long Lake Conservation Center from November 13th through 15th. Our trip was rainy and foggy with high temperature of 49 degrees Fahrenheit and a low of 30. A little rain didn't stop us from exploring. We saw swans on the lake on Thursday, but it was too foggy today to say if they were still there. It was interesting to see a bird walk up and down a tree. We learned that it was a white-breasted nuthatch. It was fun to watch the squirrels gorge themselves at the feeders, chasing each other. We named the chunkiest one with bright white ears Chimichanga.
We saw lots of deer on campus. Their coats seemed to be thickening up for the coming cold. Turkeys are everywhere. Some people in our group were freaked out by the spiders that were found inside and outside. One of the highlights was finding a garter snake outside a building. We named it Spaghetti. At first, we thought it was dead, but it was just very cold and slow moving. We brought it inside so many in our group could get a close look at it. It perked up after a few minutes. Later, a long-legged teacher took it to the entrance of a known hibernacula and watched it slither inside. We hope Spaghetti survives the winter. Rain or shine, it's always a great time to explore nature, and want to remind everyone to unplug, wear a blaze orange, get outside,
and live connected!
Yes, thank you. Spaghetti, you know... All my life I have shied away from animals, pets that don't respond to a name. And reptiles are a good example of that. I've had a few turtles as pets, and you can call them anything you want. You can yell at them, you can coax them, you can be endearing to them. and they don't give a rip. Their lives are not tied to yours. Trust me, it's not like the dog that's laying at my feet. Yeah. The other thing, seeing a garter snake, that's pretty late in the year for a garter snake. This one, obviously taking a chance, waiting until the last moment before it hits the warmth of its hibernaculum. We'll see. We wish Spaghetti the best. And I applaud those students for noticing and for being interested enough to give Spaghetti a name. Our next report comes from Chad Caddett's class at Little Falls Middle School.
This is Nash and Sam reporting from Mr. Caddett's class in Little Falls Middle School. This is our phenology report for the week of November 17th.
We have seen and heard several barred owls, including one that was closely watching a ruffed grouse.
We have seen a couple of brown creepers searching on tree trunks. One new fact we learned this week is that a buckthorn is dioecious, either male or female, which explains why we do not see berries on every tree.
A classmate found an earwig in their house and was a little surprised by this odd-looking insect.
Blue jays are busy collecting food and carrying it in a storage cache.
Turkeys are still moving around in large groups in the woods and fields.
This is anecdotal, but we did notice an unusual number of huge bucks taken on Monday the 11th. Whether it was the rut or the moon or the weakened hunting pressure, it seemed worth noting.
There are still a lot of small insects that are active during the daytime, mainly different flies and midges.
There are golden-crowned kinglets flittering around the tops of trees.
There have been a few different raven sightings in the past week.
This is our report for this week. Until next week, keep exploring, keep discovering, and keep connecting with the great outdoors.
Nice report, Nash. Sam, thank you, guys. I like the little anecdotal note about the fact that on Monday the 11th, an unusual number of bucks, large bucks, taken. There may have been something. It would be worth probably going back and sort of looking at the weather. I noticed they noted the moon, the hunting pressure, maybe barometric pressure, maybe the wind direction, who knows. But it was a bad day to be a big buck in the Little Falls area. Flies and midges, we had a little cluster of the midges ourselves. You're going to see a big flock of them, like a big tall column of them sometimes. Those are usually all males, and none of them, not male or female, have biting mouth parts. You might look at them and think mosquitoes, but that is not the case. Our next report comes from the Phenology Club at Oak Grove Elementary School in Bemidji. In Bloomington. To move, you guys.
Hi, this is Olivia,
Caroline,
Tori,
reporting from Oak Grove Elementary in Bloomington, Minnesota.
This week's weather has been cold and gloomy. This morning we have noticed a frost on the ground. With our animal observations, we saw a deer run by our playground this morning.
With our plant observations, we noticed our tamarack was attacked by a deer who chewed on it, ripped it apart, and possibly rubbed its antlers against it.
We are wondering if we will see this happen more and why a deer would do this to a tree. We also did a big garbage pickup of our forest and playground. We found lots of trash, like wrappers, cans, and bottles.
That's all for today. Stay tuned for the next OGE Phenology Club Nature episode.
Bye!
Nice job, Olivia, Caroline, and Tori. Thank you so much. And my apologies, I didn't mean to move you. I'm glad that you know that you're in Bloomington. Frost on the ground down there, the deer in their playground, and attacking their tamarack tree. Maybe the deer just hates tamaracks. I don't know. They don't tend to bother mine. At least I don't see them browsing them that much. But I do notice that oftentimes the younger tamaracks get used as a rubbing spot for them to rub the fuzz off their antlers in the fall. So pretty interesting. And thank you for going out and picking up the garbage. That's always a task that is not that much fun, but is oftentimes so necessary. Our final report for the week comes from Michelle Martin's class at Prairie Creek Community School, way down south in Northfield, Minnesota.
Hi, this is Wyatt.
And this is Amelie.
We're from Prairie Creek Community School, way down south in Northfield, Minnesota.
Oh dear, we saw a lot of deer this week. Altogether, we saw at least 10, and Oscar saw a 3-year-old buck.
His dad told them how old it was, and we're wondering how he knew. It may have to do with the antlers.
Annabelle saw a fox.
And Andrew saw a coyote.
There is a mouse or